Bags down, spikes on. Welcome to the track. Hi, my name is Colin Waitzman. I'm going to be your host of this episode of Track World News presented by Track Barn. And today we have a special guest joining us. He is returning back to the show from an interview we did about a year ago. Now he's got a little more hardware this time. Trevor Bassett, the second place at Indoor World Championships. Trevor, how you doing, man?
I'm good, man. Thank you for having me. It's always fun to be on the show, and this time to be co-hosting, it's really cool, so I'm excited for it.
For sure, for sure. Well, before we get into the co-hosting, got to see some of that hardware. Do you have that the world's
I
medal
do.
On you?
I do. We got it right here.
Woo!
Got the world's silver medal.
That thing's shiny.
And then on the back has
the name too.
Name, event, and the time.
Oh,
so, yeah, it's hefty. Definitely the heaviest medal I've got, so that's cool.
that is pretty sick, man. That's pretty sick. Yeah. Did they just give you the medal, or did it have like any cases or anything, or how'd you get
that? They gave us the medal, and it was like a stuffed plum that came with it too, that had a face on it, because plums are really big in Serbian culture. I kind of wish they'd have gave us a medal case, but I didn't end up getting one. If they did give them out, I must have missed that somewhere.
Hey. Very cool to be able to get a silver medal in your first world championships, and not even being your event. Your event's the 400 hurdles, so it's got to feel good. I mean, I know obviously you're a competitor, you want to win, and it was really close at the end there. But you know, how was that whole experience for you with being your first time?
It was awesome. I mean, every track person's dream is to make Team USA, whether it's an Olympic team, outdoor worlds, indoor worlds. To be able to make the team in general was really cool. And then to just go out and leave my first world championships with a silver medal, with a lifetime best. Obviously, yeah, I wanted to win, and I was super close, and that's going to sting forever. But second place, lifetime best at a world championships, and the first one I've ever been at, is nothing to be upset about.
Yeah, well, you'll go out. We'll get a couple goals later on. You got plenty of career.
Yeah, for sure.
Awesome. So today we're going to be discussing a few different topics. And if you're interested in co-hosting a future episode, join our inside lane. DM us on Instagram. We can add you, and you'll get a chance to do it monthly. But we had one of the biggest weekends, or most exciting weekends, when it came to track and field. We had Tom Jones in Florida and Mount SAC over in California. So polar opposites of the U.S. You were actually at Mount SAC and performed pretty well with dropping a 49 for your 400 meter hurdle. So let's start there. You know, how did your race go? What kind of insight could you give on how you ended up performing there?
Yeah, I mean, 49.15, season's best, took a pretty good chunk off my previous season's best, so I'm happy with that. We're still working our way into speed work, and the execution in the first half of the race just isn't there yet. I mean, I live in Ohio, weather hasn't been great, we've been stuck inside a lot. So really trying to figure things out that first 200, we're in heavy training phases, high volume, and the finish, though, I was very happy with. My second half of the race, I was really happy with. I stuttered on hurdle 9, which I need to cut. But outside of that, just fixing that first half of the race with more speed work and kind of getting outside as the weather gets better will kind of piece everything together. But for 49.1 in mid-April and to come away with a win, I'm really happy with it.
Yeah, it's always great getting the dub, and especially when you're doing a pretty good time. Like I'm saying, I mean, that 49, that's probably winning. You're meddling a lot of state meets in just the open 400 there. So
yeah, that happens though.
Yeah, there you go. And so let's start with Mount SAC. So some performances that stood out on the 100 side, we saw Michael Williams dropping a 9.83 with only 2.5 wind. Awesome seeing him rebound from the performance he had in indoor championships, where wasn't able to get to the finals because of the false start. Obviously now he's performing really well here with the 100, looking great. I mean, were you able to see that race, or? When you were
I did. I was across the track because the way they set up the track for like the Golden Games was different. Where I was sitting was the home stretch for like the Mount SAC relays, but because where the TV cameras were, they were on the other side of the track. But they shot that gun off and he just had, he gapped everyone within the first like 30 meters. I had never seen anything like it. And then obviously he picked up, people closed a little bit, but he pulled away. See, 9.8, that's the fastest I've ever seen a 100 in person, was 9.83. And then the 2.5 wind, and I know for him, it's just like, dang, I couldn't, wind couldn't have died down just a little bit more to be wind legal, but running 9.83 is running 9.83. Obviously the wind helps, but if it's just a 0.5, like to run a 9.83 in April, he's going to be set up to do something big here soon.
Yeah. I mean, he's been doing really well in the 100. I mean, what he got fifth last year at the Olympic trials, was able to make the team with the sub 10, got another sub 10 right here. And I'm not sure if you know, cause I don't know how it works, but when it comes to the wind gauge, is it like, that's the average wind over the entire race? Or is that like, that's just the peak? Like, do you know how that works? I have no idea. Like,
that's a good question. I know for jumping events, how it works is they have a piece of tape on the track, and when the jumper passes it, they look at the wind gauge, see what that is then. I don't know if it's kind of the same thing where like someone's reading the wind gauge and it's whatever the wind is when they pass like the halfway point. That I'm not 100% sure about. I don't think it would be the average, because they'd get that average pretty fast for how much wind changes like from second to second. So I would assume it'd just be the wind when they hit a certain point. But okay. I could very well be wrong.
Yeah, that would stink. Imagine if like, oh, you ran just a little too fast, and so that's why it was two meters when you were like a half a second before, but you're so quick,
yeah,
it goes up. Whatever it is, yeah, he's looking really dangerous. I mean, he's one of those guys. I definitely feel he can make that 100 team. I mean, there's so many people in that area that could do it. I mean, who do you think are some of those guys that could end up making that 100 team for the U.S.?
That's a good question. I mean, you obviously have, I mean, there's Christian Coleman, Marvin Bracy. If Fred wants to do the 100 again, Fred, yeah, who, will do the 100 again.
What's he doing?
Again.
No one knows.
No, Fred does what Fred does. Whatever he feels like, he's going to go out there and he's going to be a beast at it. That's just how he is. Noah Lyles, shoot, Kenny Benair could probably step in. You got Michael Williams, Matthew Bowling. Like, there's a chance, and it might not happen just because of how competitions go, but there is a chance if the weather's good, if everyone's peaked right, that at the USA Championships, you could have a field of people all go sub 10. And then at that point, you're really going to be splitting hairs for that top three.
Yeah. There's going to be some really, really fast runners that are going to be left off of the world team in the 100. I mean, there's going to be some fast runners left out of the final for the US trials.
Yeah.
Like,
I mean, that right there was seven people. I didn't even mention Ronnie Baker.
Yeah.
I mean, you can go down the list of people, like that's going to be a very hard final to make, let alone top three to make.
Yeah. They're lucky that Coleman got the bye, and so they can still have the three. Cause.
I forgot yeah, about that rule. So mm-hmm. I think it's the same with Michael Cherry for the 400 then.
Yeah.
I forgot about that.
Yeah. So that's going to help out the field a little bit, since like, all right, good, we don't have to worry about Christian Coleman. Cause if that was another guy, so it opens it up a little bit, but it's still like, man, that's going to be an almost impossible team to make.
Yeah.
Then, earlier on in the weekend at Mount SAC, we saw a national record go down with Aiden Owens. He put up, what was it, in 8,528, I think that's what it was.
Yeah, I think it was around there.
Yeah, 8,528. A huge, obviously massive PR, national record. He's the go-to name in the decathlon right now. And it's awesome to see how the multi-events this year are just super exciting and competitive on the women's side and on the men's side. I mean, what were your kind of takeaways seeing another national record go down this weekend?
First of all, what's so impressed about that was all of his marks were wind legal, which is really hard to do, especially at a meet like Mount SAC where it was been windier. And for each event, like the 100, the hurdles, long jump, like for all of those to go through wind legal is impressive. I'm a guy, I've ran a lot of 400s in my day, 4x4s, whatever. I could not imagine having to run a 400 at the end of day one, let alone run it as fast as, I think he went like 46.05, something crazy. And then he came back the next day, and in the 1500, I don't remember his time exactly, but I think he had to have like a 5-second PR to break the record. Yeah. And I think he PR'd by like 9 or 10 seconds running by himself, leading the whole way, which is so incredible. And is such a statement to like his mental toughness as an athlete to not at any point during that being like, okay, like I'm just going to shut it down. I'll take like an 81. I'll take an 8,100 in a world lead, just not get the record. We'll save that for another day. But he was able to fight through like that voice in his head, which is unbelievable.
Yeah. He's shown that he performs really well when you need to. I mean, at the national championship indoors, he was down by like 250 points and he comes back and wins it by like 9 points. He was in fifth place. He was mathematically almost out of it. He was almost supposed to be out of it, comes back and wins. Here, he needs to PR by 5 seconds and in the 10th event when you're drop dead tired, and he does it. It's like he performs when you need to, which is like, it's crazy, like that he's doing so well, you know, at this early in the season too, first deck.
Yeah, and that's what's crazy about all of these things, all these tops we're going to go through is like, you have to keep in mind, this is mid-April. Right. Like for NCAA athletes, the big things at the end of or the beginning of June for the national championships. But for someone like Aiden, I feel like he's going to be looking towards maybe the multi-championships, which are earlier in the year, or even for most sprint athletes, you're looking towards June. So for people to be running as fast as they are right now is ridiculous.
Yeah, there were, I think, 4 national records broken this weekend and like another 5 like top fives. Like there were. This was a crazy weekend to be dropping a lot of really fast times. I mean, and this got to ask the question because you're in that conversation now too. You finally got your respect. You're on the Bowerman watch list. We talked about it too last year. Like you probably should have been on that. You're on the honorable mention. You're finally on the list. What's it like, you know, you're in that conversation to be one of the best athletes in college running this year and seeing these other guys in college dropping crazy fast times? Like what's kind of your perspective, you know, being an athlete and, you know, you're going against them, but you're not really, it's not the same events. Like what's that look like?
Right. I mean, seeing that, it's like, it's just wow. Cause I mean, I'm on a list with Aiden Owens, with Trey Cunningham, Micah Williams, the guy from Texas Tech that went 143. Like these are people that are just not just at the best in the country or in college. Like these are some of the best people in the world. So I see their performances. And I'm kind of sitting there, I'm like, shoot, I went 49-1. Like, I kind of got to step it up. Like, this dude's setting a national record. Like, I got to step it up in practice. I got to bring more juice. Got to really go after more in competitions. So it's kind of making me, when I look at it and I see that happen, I look more like, okay, I got to raise my level to kind of match that. Because we've seen it. The Bowerman list is, it's hard to get on, as I obviously figured out. It's even harder to stay on, though, because you have people that weren't on the list before popping a time and then they get put on the list. And I mean, you look at Trey Cunningham went 13-2 and 13-3 back to back at Tom Jones. So I mean, it's an incredible list of people, but it's really hard to stay on if you're not bringing your A game.
Yeah, if you want to stay on, it's like, yeah, you've got to be performing nearly PRs like every time, like beating these big names. Like it's tough. Like I can only imagine, you know, what that's like. You mentioned it earlier, Fred Curley, just dude can do whatever he wants. He was another pretty big standout performance. Drops a 1980 world leading time, new personal best, beats Michael Norman as well in a 1983 super close race. Rye Benjamin coming in with a 20.01. What can this guy not do, I guess, is the question. Like, how far could this guy throw in shot put? What's his 1500 meter looking like? How's his pole vault going to look? I mean, this guy's just, he's unreal when it comes to athletics right now.
I'll say there is one thing. There is one thing Fred Curley can't do, and that's run slow. That's the only thing he can't do. Cause I mean, he spent all of last season doing the 100 because he could, doing the 200 because he could. He gets an Olympic bronze medal in the 100 when everyone told him it was stupid to go for the 100. So now he's like, okay, I can do the 200. And I think what's really going to help the sport, I think the sport does better when really good people race head to head, right? Like Michael Norman and Fred Curley are traditionally 400 guys stepping down to the 2. And it was Fred Curley got him by 0.03. And then you might have saw it, but Michael Norman tweeted, like, congratulating him and said, hey, I want my rematch. So things like that, racing head to head, because you don't see that a lot. A lot of times you'll see the bigger names in track and field not really race each other, and they kind of save it for a world championship, which is fine. But to really grow the sport and to just help each other out, because the more you race fast people, the more likely you're going to be to run fast. So I think that's going to be something that's going to be really fun to watch. Looking forward is kind of this Michael Norman, Fred Curley rivalry over, whether it's over 100 meters, 200, 400, maybe they go 800, like, because those are two guys. If you look at most 400 runners and 400 hurdlers, honestly, if you look at every elite sprinter, a lot of them can step up in distance or step down and run really fast times.
Yeah. It's great. Like, I love having these people running earlier on in the season, because, you know, then it's, I don't want to just have it saved for the national championship. Cause like, what if they don't run each other? Like, you know, what if Fred Curley decides he's not doing the 200 and he's doing the one and the four, or what if Norman decides he's doing the four, like, you know, we might not see it. And so I love seeing it early on, because then when the championship does happen, it's like, all right, look, Fred Curley got him the last time they raced. And now, you know, like, Norman wants to get his revenge on that. Like, what's it going to look like? You get these storylines. And so I'm glad that we're seeing these guys going head to head. And I think it's just only going to improve the sport as well.
Oh, for sure. Like you said, the big thing is the storylines. Storylines sell. I saw someone tweet it one day. They said professional sports is just soap operas for men. And I couldn't agree more, because that's really how it is, because we get invested in these storylines and all of these things. And it's something that track and field, for the most part, has tended to be missing because of these high level guys not necessarily racing each other, whether it's because I don't think they do it intentionally, but it might be because training schedules don't match up. One guy's going to this meet, he's going to another. But when they do match up, you see really good things happen.
Yeah, because it's not like the NFL or the NBA or anything where it's a set schedule. You're guaranteed to compete against each other, whether it's once a year or if in the NFL every 2-3 years, whatever it is. Like with track, you may never race against the best athlete, because you can just have schedules be different until the world championship or whatever it is. But I'm hoping we get some more of these people. And, you know, a number that he came in third, but Rye Benjamin with the 20.01, you know, that's only going to help him, especially going into that 400 meter hurdles with USA's. I mean, that's crazy fast for a dude that's, you know, typically running over hurdles.
Yeah, that's the thing I think a lot of people are overlooking, is that he went 20.01. I think his PB is 19.9. I think he's just up, because I think he's in 19.9, but I'm pretty sure he ran that fresh after his last season at USC. So like, he was peaked and like ready to roll. Whereas now it's like we've said 100 times already on this show, it's April. So for him to go out and run a 20.01, he's Rye Benjamin, right? Like, there's no secret. He's one of the best sprinter hurdlers out there. He's the best 400 hurdler in US history. So for him to be hitting that fast of speed work already bodes really well for what he's probably trying to do down the road.
Yeah, he's definitely priming up. Good to have that speed. Always super, super helpful. He's the men's sprint's just going to be insane this year. Then want to go over to the women's side for the last event that we're looking at Mount SAC. We had Twinesha Terry, Nike athlete, formerly of USC. Also, we'll get into a thought I had in a second. Runs a 10.77. plus 3.3 wins, so a little bit windy, but massive PR for her. Huge, huge race, and just another time where it's like, man, if that wind was a little bit farther down, it still would have been crazy. Probably would have been a low 10.8, but you know, she's running out of her mind already, once again, in the middle of April.
Yeah, and she hit the little, that chopper dance after. It was a big PB for her, and I think, like for a lot of people there, I think that was her opener. And I think it's pretty rare, especially at the professional level, to see people run big personal best, wind aided or not, in their season opener. And Mount SAC's a fast track. There was great competition, everything. But for that to get all pieced together this early is a really good sign.
Yeah. I mean, first year as a professional. So she's doing all this like in her rookie year. I know Elaine Thompson-Arah ran that 10.8 in the prelims, then didn't do the that. So she's looking like she's doing Elaine Thompson-Arah things as well. Like,
right.
She's going to be great. My question that I was thinking about, Nike, they finally released their new uniforms after using those same dang ones for 6 years. Any thoughts on the new uniforms that they brought out this year?
Was it actually 6 years?
Probably. It's been since the Olympic cycle.
I know it's been a minute.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't mind them. Like, they're basic. Like, for the men, it's that, like, blue. I think it's blue. It looks like a lightish blue color. And then the girls have, like, the reddish pink. I mean, it's pretty basic. It's just it's got the texture to it, like the USA suits have. And it's just got the Nike logo. So it's not, like, flashy or anything. But I don't mind it. I mean, I see Ryan Grant on Twitter kind of going back and forth about the uniforms. But, yeah, I think they're pretty solid all in all.
Yeah. They went with like the tried and true. Like, you're not going crazy with it. So you're not going to get complete duds, but it also, it's like when you play it safe a bit, you're also not going to get some crazy, crazy cool one. So I think it's not bad. They're all right.
It's a lot easier to mess up a uniform by releasing it than to really make a big splash. So I feel like they just kind of, like you said, they kind of played it conservative, played it safe. They're going to go with this one. Who knows for how long? They might have something in store coming up. But I saw the black, like the world champion, like Olympic champion versions of it with like the black and gold.
Oh, like the Katie Schott one. That was good.
Those look fire.
Yeah. That was
good.
There
you go. If you don't like it, I mean, just get an Olympic or world gold and you can get the black and gold one.
There you go. Yeah. Just win an Olympic gold. You,
yeah. You know, yeah. Easy stuff, right?
It's not even that hard. It's not even that hard. Awesome. So now let's take a look at Tom Jones. We saw in the 4x4 Florida putting up an insane 4x4, running a 2:58.53, coming in second behind the Adidas men, big national record for them. Florida now has the national record for the 4x1 and the 4x4. I mean, how crazy is this? Just this Florida universe. It looks like Florida just has all of the big names this year and is putting up crazy numbers this entire season.
It's Coach Holloway, man. He's got that culture. He's got the athletes. And when you have that mix, things happen. Because I think Florida, aren't they the first team to go sub 2:59 in college, I believe, because the old record was above it. And I mean, you have, was it champion Allison on the anchor that went 43.4?
I think so, yeah.
I mean, that's just because you got champion Allison. You've got, I can't remember all their names. You got Ja'Cory Patterson. I think the one guy's name's Wiley, and I don't remember the leadoff guy. So if he's listening to this, I'm sorry, space your name. But I mean, they obviously have the aptitude because they did it. But I think you really don't see 4x4 national record or collegiate records until the national championships. That's something where like you don't really see that happen this early, because you need all four guys to be peaked. You need the weather to be decent. You need the competition, which they had with the Adidas team, and they had the weather at Florida. But for all four guys to be like on their A game at that point in the season is ridiculous. And I'm excited to see what the D1 championships bring, because there's enough competition out there to where like Florida still could maybe not win. Like some of these other teams could come in and maybe break their record still, because that's just how the D1 men's 4x4 is.
Yeah. Like they're technically not even close to being peaked yet. Like you're not.
Oh, no.
Like you're put together a peaked performance in a time where you're all still going through tough training, and you're not expected to put, you know, to have one guy do really well is crazy enough. To have all four be able to put together a team. And like you mentioned, I think being able to chase the Adidas team is huge, because you got that, you're chasing Grant Holloway, who we'll get into him in a second, but he's I think having that leading off chasing you to the record was helpful as well.
I mean, they could have gone, I feel like at any point, if you go like 301 to 303 at this point in the year, it's like, holy cow, these guys are rolling early. So let alone 2:58, ridiculous.
Insane. I love the reactions that a lot of the Florida team had. They showed, they were showing pictures and videos of them in the stands, just like astonished of what's going on. So Love that. That's something I love seeing. Whenever you see someone have a big performance and then you look at what their team reacts to, and it's like,
oh yeah,
I'm sure Ash, I'm sure you guys have it whenever you've won one of your million national championships. They might be numb to it now because you've won so many.
I mean, that's one of the best things about track and field is like the emotions and the reactions, which is why like I've never been a person where like if you see someone run a fast time, whether it's like a collegiate record, a big PR, whatever, and you just see him just kind of walk off the track, like, yeah, it kind of has its own cool thing, like, oh, whatever, like, I'm used to it. Like, I expected this. Like, that's cool and all, don't get me wrong. But when you see someone start, like, beating their chest, like, they're fired up, they're yelling, I think it brings this whole other flair and everything to the sport. Like, when Sha'Carri won the trials in the 100, she went and jumped in the stands. That was so cool. And it's something that people can really kind of get behind and be like, wow, like, it's a high emotion moment. Like, this is really cool to see.
Yeah, like I love you saw just what this weekend with Michael Williams. He's dancing after he runs.
Oh,
his
yeah.
Like
Devin Allen points at the camera. Like that's yeah. I think that's great for the sport.
And even in shot put, you have Tripp, the Texas guy who.
Yeah.
It looks you'd think he broke a world record after every throw with how crazy with how crazy he's going. So bringing the emotion. Then we talked about it with Tom Jones. I guess my question brings us back. We talked about how Fred Curley, that dude can do anything. Grant Holloway, he also can do anything. If both of these guys trained initially for a decathlon, who do you think would be better? Like, let's say they started in high school training for a decathlon.
Oh, they started in high school?
Let's say that. High school, okay. Both of these guys are started training for a decathlon. Who's winning?
I mean, I got to go Grant Holloway. Because he has the hurdle times. We know he's an All-American long jumper. I think he jumped 6'10 or 6'11 in high school too at the high jump.
Yeah.
So, I mean, Fred might get him in the 4 and the 1. And
the
maybe
throwing events.
I don't know about that. But I know for like the most part, a lot of the points come from like the sprints, hurdles, and jumps. And I'm gonna have to give the edge to Grant. I think in an all-out decathlon, I think I got to go Grant. Which now that I say that, Fred might hear and Fred might do a decathlon and then make an Olympic team in that as well, because I wouldn't put it past him.
Yeah. Fred listens to the show, man. So he might be like, say less. He's starting to train for the decathlon tomorrow where he's going to make, he's going to make Paris 2024 in the decat. Yeah. Those guys
would not be surprised.
They're insane talents. Grant Holloway ran the 100 10:21 4x1. He was the third leg running a 38:09 and then anchored the 4x4 with a 2:57. I think he split like a 44:02 or something like that. Like something crazy.
I thought he broke back into the 43s. I thought
did
it was
they
a
say 43.
I think he had the same split as Florida's anchor. Because they kind of started at the same point, Edison. So I think his was roughly this. I think he was like a mid 43, maybe high 43. Which for him, I mean, we don't know the training they're doing down at Florida, but I'd imagine he's primarily training as a 110 hurdler and a shorter sprinter. So he's not really doing this longer distance stuff. So for him to go out and in the first 4x4 of the season, for him to run a, regardless whether it was a mid 43 or a low 44. Like, I think he's shown that if he wants to, he should be like, hey, Team USA, I want on this 4x4, put me on it if the schedule allows it. And at that point, I feel like they can't really argue that because of everything he's done.
Yeah, I guess he's called Wonder Boy for a reason. I mean, this guy's
100%.
He's running insane. To be able to run a 10:21 and a 43 point in the same day is like, pretty unheard of. Like he's just super extremely versatile. And I mean, yeah, I don't know what the training's looking like, but whatever it's looking like, they're doing the right thing.
It's working. Yeah, it's working. I mean, he kind of turned back the clock to the college schedule at Florida with the 100, 4x1, 4x4.
Yeah. All he has to do is throw in a long jump in there and
go do one attempt, jump a smooth 8:20 meters, something like that.
Yeah. He's crazy. Awesome. Awesome talent. But, and any other topics or things from the weekend that you saw, that might've, you know, wanted to go before we closed out here, Trev?
I'm kind of seeing it more so on NFL Twitter instead of track Twitter, but Devin Allen going 10-12, which I don't know if his 10-12 was wind legal or not.
I think it was, yeah.
But so let's say it was. People freaked out last year when DK Metcalf went 10-3. Devin Allen comes out and runs a 10-1. I think it's the first time he'd ran the 100 in like 2-3 years. So, I mean, him showing that he can run that fast without hurdles, get some pads on him. I think he personally, I mean, I'm biased because I'm a track guy, but I think if he's able to stay healthy, I think he can make some noise for the Eagles. I think he'd be a solid like number 3, number 4 receiver for him.
You think you're biased because you're a track guy. I'm a track guy and an Eagles guy, and we interviewed. Oh, so
I'm a Titans guy, so I can't really get with that.
Yeah, it's all right. We'll just go past that.
Different conferences, it's fine. We're good.
We'll meet you in the playoffs. But
yeah, sounds good.
Yeah, I'm excited for him to be on the Birds. When I saw he was going to the NFL, I'm like, oh, I hope he goes to the Eagles. And then he did. I'm like, holy crap, this is insane. But yeah, he's gonna have some crazy speed. Looking forward to seeing how he's gonna be competing in the NFL. And you know, a lot of my friends who are Philadelphia Eagles fans, they were tuning in because they're like, I want to see how this guy does. He's gonna be our future guy on the team. So it's bringing more viewers. I bet you that USA 110 meter final is gonna be viewed pretty well because we're gonna have some extra people hopefully tuning in.
Yeah, there's no. As long as there's more eyes, doesn't really matter. The more people watching, the better. And then the one last topic I wanted to touch was, I mean, Trey Cunningham, 13-2. I think he has the world lead right now. It was his opener at Tom Jones. So, I mean, just like every other sprint, just like every other track and field event in the United States, it's looking like it's going to be a stacked field really early.
Yeah. Trey has been having the most consistent year this season, it feels like, across the 60-meter hurdles and now the 110-meter hurdles. He's just super clean over everything. Yeah. And I'm wondering, like, what's he going to be able to get down to? Like, is he going to get to the 13-0? Like, could he, I mean, shoot, break a 12.99? I mean, it's possible. Like, he's showing that we can definitely see some crazy times. Like, he's going to be able to fill into the Devin Allen competing in the NFL. He'll just fill in really, really, really nicely there. So yeah, he's got a tremendous talent.
Yeah. I mean, we saw it at indoors. He was starting to creep pretty close to the Daniel Roberts, Grant Holloway, like record territory. Yeah. So we know he has the speed for it. I would not be surprised if at either his conference championships or the regional or the national championships for NCAAs, I wouldn't be surprised if he went 13-0, whether it's 13 flat, 13-09, I would not be surprised at all.
Yeah. He's got the talent. He can definitely do it. And so I'm looking forward to it. I want to see him do it. Also friend of the show. We had him on about, I think it was one of my first interviews, but, awesome. Trevor, thank you so much for joining us today, co-hosting this episode. Where can people go if they wanted to follow more about what's going on with you?
Yeah, my Instagram and Twitter are the same. It's at Trevor Bassett 30. So it's literally just my name and the number 30. So it's pretty simple. But yeah, so if you want to keep up with me I'm more active on Instagram than I am Twitter. I'm trying to get more active on Twitter, trying to get more active with it. But Instagram is the main thing that I'll use for like track updates, posts, stuff like that. Twitter is just more so like random thoughts throughout the day and my Wordle scores. So.
There you go. If you want to keep up and see if you're beating Trevor and Wordle, go ahead and follow there. Thank you, Trevor, for joining us. Really appreciate it. And thank you to everyone for listening. This has been another episode of Track World News. If you want more content, go and follow us over on Instagram at Track World News. We post pretty much daily there, new highlights and updates, things like that. That's going to do it for us here. Have a good one. Peace.